This podcast was created using Anchor.
Boom, 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 boom. Hum, dum, dum, da, da, dum. Hum, dum, dum, da, da, dum. Hum, dum, dum, da, da, dum. Hum, dum, dum, da, 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 dum. Hum, dum, dum, da, da, dum. Hum, dum, dum, da, da, dum. Hum, dum, dum, da, da, dum. It's good.
It's good.
So good.
It's so good.
It's really good. Since we're together.
It's good.
It's good.
So good.
So good.
Oh.
Since we're together.
This song just keeps on giving. It's the gift that keeps giving.
It's amazing. It's truly amazing.
This song is a bop.
It's a bop.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody. It's Dave.
And Bree.
And this is?
Dave and Bree.
And the show?
It's The Swirl.
There you go.
With Bree and Dave. Wait, hold on. First of all, I was put off by the fact that you call yourself Dave. It's just weird.
Really?
It's like, you don't like to be called Dave.
That's not true, actually. I'm fine with Dave. It just sort of depends on...
Who is Dave? Dave is not the man I married. I married David.
Mm.
A nice Jewish boy.
Well, Dave can be a nice
Dave
Jewish boy.
Dave is like Dave Coulier, and no.
It's way too Coulier for you.
Good night. I just don't think you're Dave.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. There's some people who think I'm pretty damn cool that would disagree
Dave
with you.
Dave is like, the name Dave is so like white guy.
Babe.
And you're not white, you're Jewish.
I gotta tell you something. This is episode 19. It's kind of a hell of a time to spring this on me.
Go ahead.
Nope. 19 episodes of Bree and Dave is kind of what, it's out there now.
Sorry, but it's always bugged me. I never said anything.
Yeah. Interesting lesson in life. You should always just speak up at the beginning, because the next thing you know, it'll be 19 episodes down the road, you know, like 25 hours of...
Next thing you know, people in Istanbul are listening and...
Listen, don't laugh.
And they think you're Dave.
Don't laugh. We may have to do a... Analytics check. That was good.
That wasn't
babe.
Terrible. No, it wasn't really terrible.
And
we really have to do a...
Analytics check. We really should.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're overdue for one.
Well, David, that's all you. Most of this podcast is all you.
Oh, that's sweet. I think the kids are tuning in for you, though, babe. I really do.
Well, yeah, people.
You're the star. Let's just get that out there right now. Everyone knows.
Well,
you're the damn star. I'm the Sonny to your Cher.
That was beautiful.
Yeah.
I'm the
Mr. Child to your Julia Child. I'm the, because nobody knew who the hell he was.
Yeah, I'm like, who was he in the movie?
Yes, I'm the Stanley Tucci to your Meryl Streep.
But you know what? They're a fierce team.
That's true.
Let's talk about Meryl Streep.
Okay, let's talk about Meryl Streep.
Let's talk about Meryl Streep, because last night we watched The Prom.
We did.
On Netflix.
Much to recommend.
And we did enjoy it.
Oh my God, it's great.
Of course, we've seen the show. We saw the show in its out-of-town tryout in Atlanta at the Alliance. We never saw it on Broadway, but we knew it was probably the same show, probably a little bit better.
Yeah, of course.
And
I'm sure they did a lot of work on it.
Yeah. And the movie was even better.
Yeah, we had a great time.
We had a great time, but it's upsetting how good Meryl Streep is, just at everything she decides to
do. Literally just makes it look like falling off a chair.
I was very upset by Meryl Streep.
Because the vocals.
It's just like, you are supposed to be a Hollywood A-list actress. You're not supposed to be able to do this too. And she really just got on that screen and gave us
everything
we needed.
And by the way, I did a little research. So this is the other thing that it was improbable that it would work. And for me, it really did. And this is kind of interesting, babe. I don't think you are aware of this.
Yeah, I'm listening.
Just parenthetically, and we've discussed this before, Keegan-Michael Key, I think, is a major star. I just think the chemistry, the charisma
him.
Of that man is astronomical. Mm-hmm. But the chemistry between them, I thought, really worked.
It actually worked.
Really improbably, I thought, really worked. And the age difference between them, babe, don't look it up. Don't cheat. What do you think the age difference between Keegan-Michael Key and Meryl Streep is to be playing lovers in that movie?
15 years.
22 years.
Baby. No.
You know who else is 22 years different?
It's us! High five.
Yeah, she's 71 years
I thought she was old. 70, but I thought he was...
He's 49.
He's 49?
He is 49.
Oh, okay, then I did that wrong. I meant to say 25.
Oh, 25 years. No, no, 22.
Okay.
Now, he looks incredible, of course, for 49. She looks incredible for 71. But for some reason, I'm going to give a shout out to the writing on this, too, because I think that the way that character is constructed, the Keegan-Michael Key character is constructed, you actually do understand why this man would find her fascinating, other than whatever physical attributes or attraction or chemistry was between them. There was a reason why that character would be in love with Meryl Streep's character.
Well, of course, Meryl Streep, and she's sexy.
Yeah.
She's always, it's always like she's got a secret and none of us know. She's amazing. That's a direction they give you when you take headshots.
That's a good one.
And she just has that permanently. But yeah, I believed that he liked her. I mean, I was a little confused as to why he was so obsessed with Broadway. And you know me, I'm like, oh, he must be gay. That must be the twist at the end. And then there was never a twist. So
no,
it's fine.
No. I love that. No, I loved that character. I felt like a straight theater guy.
You felt seen.
I felt seen, babe. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so rare that I get to see myself represented on screen.
Yes, I know.
And it meant a lot to me.
Such a struggle for you.
And
a white man.
The fact that you sat there and allowed me to have that experience, I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thanks. So we had a good time.
Watch The Prom. Check it out. Is it like...
It's on Netflix.
No, I know where it is, but I'm saying like, it's just like candy fun. It's great. It's great. I remember when we saw it in Atlanta, we thought... Who's the audience for this? Like, who cares if two girls go to prom together?
But
it
this
wasn't
was in
a big
20,
deal to
But this
us.
Was in 2016.
Right. And then Donald Trump became president. Ooh,
well,
shit.
He had just become president.
No.
Oh, it's Christmas time. I'll let you have it.
Oh, thanks.
We talked about this, too. The fact that who really could... I mean, we kind of could have seen 4 years ago that literally every minority group would be under assault by the end of the first
Trump
term.
Yeah, we saw that coming.
But you really... The fact that you actually need a musical now that, you know, says these basic things about, you know, love is love and equality is...
Yeah.
You know,
before it was like, of course everyone knows that. We're so far along. And then we realize that, I don't know, 70-something million people are not far along. And they're actually like... super, they don't like people who are different or different race or different sexuality, whatever. So there we are. So it's actually more what's the word, like,
relevant.
Yes, it's more relevant now than it was in 2016. So the piggy in the White House.
Yeah, unfortunately for the world, but fortunately for musical theater.
What else do we have to talk about, babe?
How's your week going, babe? It's, we're at the end of the week now. It's Sunday
night. We had a good eventful week. I had some, the days are all the same, honestly, but there's some days are different because you have auditions or self-tapes or projects to do or whatever. So I go by what days I have to put makeup on and what days I don't. And I had to put makeup on a few days because I had some self-tapes and I had some random auditions and I had a random audition for Blue Bloods and we're going to producer session on tomorrow. So that's exciting. So maybe I'll get it. Maybe I won't, but that means I'm close. So we'll see. This is the life of an actor. You just kind of put out stuff and hope someone likes it and they usually don't, and you just keep on moving.
99% of the time, it doesn't happen.
But it was really cool to do the online callback situation or appointment situation because I hadn't done it yet, and it has like a special type of what do you call it? Like, it's through Actors Access, and you go through and you. It's called EcoCast, and it's really cool what they've designed, and they did it specifically for actors and casting directors. So you're in like a waiting room. You can click when you want to go in the waiting room, and then you click when you're ready to audition, and it'll tell you if you're on deck or not. And it tells you, oh, you have your audition starts in 3, 2, 1. And there's a countdown. And then it's just you and the casting director, but you can see yourself in a tiny square, which is really cool because you can always figure out your frame and how you look, which is really great because I always get upset when I have to like get on a train, go to a place, wait outside with everyone else. You go in, you get your mic on, you make pleasantries, and then all of a sudden you're supposed to pop into this character, and it's really hard. So I actually love that the pandemic has allowed us to be in the comfort and safety of our own homes, because I'm warm. I like literally my body's warm, and I'm also my voice is warm, and I can control my makeup because my bathroom is right there. So I know what my hair and makeup looks like. It hasn't been assaulted by the elements. And then, you know, you're able to just kind of ground yourself more. So I loved that whole experience, and it went well, and we'll see if it goes well tomorrow.
I'm sure it will, babe.
It doesn't really matter. I mean, I'd love to get an extra paycheck, but...
Wouldn't we all?
I'd love to get just a paycheck, yeah.
But, and I guess, yeah.
What did you do this week? How was your week?
Well, I had a good week. I've been very fortunate in that I've had what is essentially an audition myself, but it's a paid one to write a treatment for a specific theater in a specific country, with specific people, none of whom or which I can actually divulge yet. And hopefully I'll get hired to continue. But it went very well. And you read...
So you had a big deadline.
Big deadline. You read an early draft. My daughter read an early draft, Maddie. Mm-hmm. You know, I had my brain trust.
We gave you our incredible notes.
Incredible notes. Incredibly
which,
insightful.
I'm not being sarcastic. They were very good.
Your notes were very good.
Yeah, our notes were very good.
Oh my
good.
God. Your notes were better than my treatment. If I could have submitted your notes, you guys would have gotten hired.
Very possible.
But they were very helpful, and I got through the week feeling really good about this 2-scene, 25-page treatment for this musical that I was able to submit with pride.
And that was submitted on Friday, and then that night we got to have Hanukkah with Maddie and Brandon. We got to see their new apartment. They also moved when we moved, because we like to do things together as a family, and that includes moving our entire lives. So they moved to an apartment not very far from their old one.
But much nicer.
But much nicer, very cute, quiet, adorable. And they made... food.
It was good food.
It's great food.
Brandon, my future son-in-law, is a really, really good baker.
He is a baker, and so he made challah bread with tahini and honey.
I gotta say it. Challah.
It was... I've never had challah bread. Like, I've had challah French toast.
Give us a
challah bread.
There you go.
I've never had challah bread. Unless it was...
Babe, you've got an ear.
Challah French toast, okay? But, which is like at Denny's. But...
French toast.
French toasté. But we had this just fresh out of the oven with these big old flakes of salt on it. And you just tear it apart and it just melts in your mouth. It was so good. And then he made this slab berry pie.
Yeah.
And oh my Jesus Lord, it was delicious.
Yeah.
So I don't have anything to say. I'm still kind of gagged that we had those incredible pastries.
And then we had latkes.
And then, of course, we had latkes. And Maddie roasted a chicken. And I
Delicious.
Made these roasted carrots.
Incredible.
And it was all just so delicious. And, you know, they're very fancy. So you have, like, digestifs and aperitifs. Yeah.
She's very Italian.
She's very fancy.
And I
want to, you know, that's something I want to learn from her. Maddie's really like great at buying quality. And so are you.
Thanks,
You've
babe.
Taught her that. Well, and I'm not, because I grew up not poor, but I just...
But you've taught me the values and splendors
to
of
save.
Aldi.
No, but all... Yes, of Aldi, but also to save and to like...
Yes.
You know, just like use things until you're out of them and then buy new things. But I know you guys love excess. No, you love excess. Maddie does not. She's a very limited...
Yeah.
She's a minimalistic girl.
She's sure.
But what she does is she buys really quality things, and that goes for her food, her jewelry, her just everything she does is very sustainable and quality, and I love that. So I want to be more like her with, we got this really cute bar cart, because our home is slowly coming together, and I want to have on the bar cart like all of that fancy stuff, limoncello and,
oh yes,
and some Sambuca and, you know, shit that I don't really drink, but you know.
But you'll start.
I will start.
You'll make an effort.
And I also, everyone, oh, I have also given up alcohol for the last 2 weeks. I let myself have a Campari spritz because, once again, she's so fancy. I let myself have that on Hanukkah. There's no reason. I just stopped because I wanted to just sort of look at my habits and why I drink. And, you know, the pandemic, honey, you don't have nothing but time. So you're at home and you're like, well, I'm going to have my wine at 6 o'clock like I always do, or my whiskey. And then it's a pandemic. So you're like, well, I might as well have a white wine with lunch. And then you're like, well, I should just put Kahlua in my coffee in the morning. And then by the...
You were not putting Kahlua in your coffee
But I did put whiskey in my coffee that one morning we went up to the roof here.
Wow.
And I was like...
Well, that was a special occasion.
It was a special occasion.
You were
going
up on the roof and looking at the incredible view.
Yes, but still, but we live here now. So I could say that every day is a special occasion.
I
would.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to take a step back and go, why do I drink? Make sure it's not out of boredom. And make sure, for me, I mean, gosh, it's only been just over 2 weeks and I'm feeling like really good about it. I'm sleeping so well.
Good.
I
always thought you slept well, though. I've envied you.
I do sleep
all
very
the years
well.
We've been together.
But this is.
I'm up at 4 a.m. and you're just like, no.
And I'm up at usually 11. That's my go-to time. If I'm up at 9:30 or 10, it's early for me.
I mean, this is because you've really grown accustomed. You had grown accustomed to an 8-show a week on Broadway schedule, and that's why.
And that never left me. Yeah. But I also was always sort of a night person. I always was up late at night, even much before Broadway. Always hated the mornings. So.
But anyway, you're feeling better with.
I'm feeling great. So I would recommend, you know, why not challenge yourself and have a dry December or you know.
Yeah, people are probably like, yeah, but it's Christmas.
And I'm letting myself have it if I want on Christmas or holidays, or, you know, we've got 2 weeks. So I'm just going to take it easy for 2 weeks and then I'll have another drink on Christmas if I want. But I have to say, being away from it, it made me not love it as much. I definitely had a headache that night and slept very late the next day from like 2 drinks. So.
Well, of course, we've made up for it with cocaine, and that's really, you really can.
Baby, you're on.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought I forgot. Okay.
Can you imagine? I can't imagine you on cocaine.
Well, this is the, okay.
Sorry.
No, I did it once, you know that.
I know.
Way back in college.
Tell the people the story.
I was a hero, superhero for 25 minutes.
It only lasted 25 minutes.
25 minutes, I could do anything on earth. That was possible.
And didn't you go out and like make out with some girl?
I took a girl out onto the fire escape and I kissed her. And
why are you yelling?
Because I'm feeling, you know, nostalgic and dramatic. And I was Superman. And then I came back in and then that started to come down. And there was a lot more at that party. And I looked at the lines being drawn.
Literally.
And I said, I could spend the rest of my life chasing the last 25 minutes. So no more, thank you.
Say no, or wait.
Just say no. That was.
But I really wanted to say, there's no hope with dope.
That's amazing. Boom, 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 boom. And we're back.
Welcome back, everybody. I want to first tell you that this week we're going to have our first segment with my mother-in-law.
Yes.
Marcia Goldsmith.
That's her name.
And this segment is going to be called Ask Grammy. It may happen more than once. It may not. We don't know. It depends on how well it goes today. But I want to tell you a little bit about Grammy. So she's a licensed independent social worker. She's got a a Bachelor of Arts from the Ohio State University. She's also got a Master of Science in Social Welfare from the University of Cincinnati, David's alma mater.
True.
She's been given the Vision of Excellence Award from the Cincinnati Public Schools. She has been given the Distinguished Leadership Award from the JCC Association of North America. And she has been given the Distinguished Achievement Award from Educational Press Association of America All-American Awards Program. She is also the founder and CEO of Marsha Fisher Goldsmith, LLC, and she offers consultant services to the nonprofit sector. What else, babe?
And she is 100% that bitch. Here we go.
All right, everybody. So welcome.
Welcome
to our new segment called Ask Grammy. Hi, Grammy.
Hi, Grammy.
Hi, kids. Hi, kids. How are you?
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And how are you?
We're good. I wish you could see my beautiful mother. She's looking unbelievable, beautiful.
As usual.
As always. She never gets on the Zoom without being in full beat.
Fully beat. She's got her lipstick on. She says it makes her feel alive. So here we are.
And she's thriving in the pandemic, I'm happy to say. Looks better than ever. It's true.
It's true.
Thank you. Thank
so
you.
Grammy, and why does she look better than ever?
Why does she look better than ever? Do you want to ask that? I'm going to ask Grammy her first question.
Grammy, why do you look better than ever?
Well, first of all, I don't know that I look better than ever, but if you insist, I will take that. Mm-hmm. I am very pleased with myself because I decided I would take this opportunity to go on Jenny Craig, and it is working beautifully.
How much have you lost?
I've lost close to 23 pounds.
Yes!
Amazing.
I wish I was you.
Yeah.
So I have a question.
So we've taken questions from all over the world.
All over the world.
All Istanbul. Over our country.
Yes.
That is awesome.
All of our friends and beyond. And we've culled them down to just a few favorites. And here we go.
So here's one. This is actually from our Marco Polo group, which consists of Rashidra Scott and Stephanie Umo and Christina Saju.
Collective question.
Yes. This is about the pandemic.
Okay.
Have you been isolated the entire pandemic? And what impact has it had on you mentally and spiritually? And also, they want to know, what made you want to lose weight? Why now? And how did you keep motivated? That's like six questions, but
yes, I mean, you want to call those down and give me your priorities.
Fair. That's fair.
Let's start with the weight because that's an incredible feat. What made you want to lose weight? Why now? And how did you keep motivated?
Well, the first week of the pandemic, I put on 5 pounds, mm-hmm. and I was overweight to begin with. And I said to myself, they're going to have to roll you out of this apartment if you don't get a hold of yourself. And in a moment of unbelievable strength, I called Jenny Craig. And
you know Jenny?
Oh, so intimately, my dear.
Well, there you go. That helps. Inside track with Jenny.
Well, between you and me, something tells me that the original Jenny sold to somebody else who probably sold to somebody else. I'm guessing, who knows? Kraft Foods may own it by now. Nevertheless, I have no idea. I called my friendly little Jenny Craig shop down the street, and they are now, because of the pandemic, they are delivering. And if you live nearby, they deliver free. And so I was delighted with that. And so I signed up, not knowing whether it would work, quite frankly, because almost nothing works with me. But I realized that the one major variable in my eating was that I wasn't going out to dinner. Mm-hmm. And I hate to say it, I really hate to admit it, but I think when we go out to dinner, we probably are adding lots of calories that we don't even realize we're doing. Something tells me some wonderful stuff is going on back in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And when a plain dish comes out to us, it probably has a lot more calories on it than we would guess. And because I have refrained from going, everyone I noticed has refrained from going out to dinner, I began to lose and have lost consistently for 9 months. For me, that's really unusual. So yes, I am delighted.
Another question.
I am absolutely delighted.
Because I started a little weight loss journey over the last week with Noom. I'm doing that one, and that one is like behavioral. So they're breaking down why you reach for food or alcohol, what your habits are, how healthy they are, and how to sort of improvise. Yes. And I just wondered, did you ever plateau? Was there ever a time where you plateaued and you thought?
Yes, and that's I think in the past that's where I've gotten into trouble. I went through a very intense program that was similar to Noom many years ago. It was very effective. And as a matter of fact, if you can work with a program like that, that does speak to the behavioral issues, because that's where the problem is. Mm-hmm. The problem isn't with food. The problem is with where we're coming from in our hearts and in our minds. That gets us into problem because we're using food. Mm-hmm. And a program like that can really get you on a straight and narrow. You become very aware of what behavior you're doing and what your feelings are. You can't dismiss what your feelings are because that's where the problem is. Mm. So I applaud you to try that. The only major problem I would think with Noom is that you're getting one-on-one counseling, because I know I did try it before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. You do have a one-to-one counselor, but it isn't the same when you're doing it in person and you're intensely meeting with a person. Yes, and you're getting psychological help. You're getting social work help. It can be really much more intense than Noom, but it can change your life, mm-hmm. which was amazing. But that does not mean that you'll leave your weight off forever, because there's something physical going on as well with your body, with your metabolism, mm-hmm. with whatever that I struggle with, because I gain weight washing dishes. So,
well, it's a lifestyle. It's a lifestyle change. And what I kind of love about, I agree, this little check-in with this sort of robot person. I mean, and it is a real person. Her name is Megan, apparently.
Yes, yes.
And it's great to have her sort of check in and see, hold me accountable for things or ask me questions about the goals that I set. But it's not like having a real coach or looking somebody in the eye and having to tell them what you ate. But it's great because it does make me think about it more. And I think mm-hmm. a lot of my issues are fog eating. Like just eating because I'm bored or because, you know, I'm just zoned out or I'm tired or I want to relax or whatever. So I have found it helpful in that way, but I think you're amazing for deciding to do this in, I don't know, like this unprecedented time. You will be one of those people that comes out of this looking like way like better.
And well, I intend to come out of this butterfly. That's
a butterfly.
Yes.
I'm going to be a transform into a butterfly.
Okay.
Love that.
This one comes from Gina of Washington Heights. Gina asks, "Do you have any tips? Oh, dear Grammy, do you have any tips for sharing a room in a one-bedroom apartment with a little one and keeping it clean and neat?"
Oh, Gina, you have a problem. And I would hesitate to ask, do you have a man living with you as in the form of the father?
Let's just assume the answer is yes.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, Gina, when we are pressed to live in a small space or to work in a small space, we really have to adjust how we use the space, basically. And that takes strength and courage to look around you and say, what in this space do I really need? Mm-hmm. Do I really want? Because this is a period of time and I'm sure that it won't last. Someday you'll be able to afford a room for the child. Until then, you will happily, I'm sure, make the most of the space you have. And there are different options that you can use, I believe. Well, first of all, what I think is absolutely necessary is you got to look around to see what you can get rid of. Mm-hmm. You don't start bringing in fixes until you see what you can get rid of. And then when you get rid of stuff, and I'm talking about stuff in drawers and stuff in files and stuff on shelves and furniture, what is really essential to you and your partner to live comfortably and happily and know that it's your home? Certainly don't want to make it barren or like a hospital room, but it's got to be efficient. And you may need help, whether you bring a decorator in or the property brothers, or somebody who knows how to make use of space. And if you're one of the people that just don't know how to make use of space, then find yourself some help, because that's going to be the key, to get rid of stuff first. Don't start bringing in solutions. Get rid of stuff first. Then decide how you're going to use the space you have. I'm assuming you have a living room and a bedroom. Well, you may want to give the bedroom over to the baby and your clothes and dresser or whatever you might have. And if you can, depending on the wall space in your living room, depending on what your landlord would allow, find out what it would take to put a Murphy bed in your living room so that you just bring down that whatever it looks like when it's up on the wall, and you just bring it down and there's your bed. Not romantic particularly, but if the rest of your room is well appointed and not look like a junk heap, then it may work. And you suddenly have a living room, a bedroom, and a bedroom for the child. That's one thing you could do.
I've seen some great Murphy bed things, really modern.
We really have.
Some beauties.
Rose house.
So that's, well, you know, I will say this, it's a great, great that you got that question, Grammy, because I can just speak for myself. You're a genius at interior organization and design. Before I met Bree, even, that was, you were my go-to.
I'm not a genius, but I do appreciate that, dear.
You're a genius in many things. You've got an eye.
You've got a real eye for space and color and, you know.
The other thing you can do, Gina, is get in touch with Grammy personally and she'll Zoom you through. She'll look at your space.
She actually will look at your space and tell you what to do.
Yeah. For a fee. Anyway. All right. You're kind of great.
Okay. So my next question.
Now who does this come from?
This comes from Terrence Archie.
Broadway star.
Broadway star.
Oh, my God.
Terrence Archie.
Wow.
What might I have seen Terrence in if I was
Ragtime?
Lucky?
You would have seen Terrence in Ragtime.
You would have seen Terrence in
Rocky as Apollo Creed.
As Apollo Creed. Kiss Me Kate as the General.
Kiss Me Kate.
I'm going to cry. I'm gonna
and
cry.
Currently when it comes back in Company.
In Company, yes.
Whenever it comes back.
So
all of these people who've asked questions are Broadway stars. I just didn't say that, but yes.
I have questions from Singapore.
So this question is Terrence wants to know about David. Terrence wants to know what he was like as a child, and he also wants to know when you knew what you thought he was going to grow up to do, and when you knew, and if that was what he grew up to be.
Well, Terrence, I have to really be honest with you. When he was first born, I really had my eye on his being the first Jewish president of the United States.
That's a disappointment. He's going to be a doctor. He had to be president.
No, I didn't think of doctor. I didn't think of lawyer. I just thought, this may be the first Jewish president. Wow. And I must tell you, by the time the fate of John Kennedy came around, I decided that I was not putting up my son for the president of the United States. Anyhow, I would say that I didn't know, because I did know, this is what I did know. And I had to tell his father this very, very distinctly. This child, and so was our son Scott, would grow up to be what they needed to be. They would grow up to be what they wanted to be. And I was convinced of that because I had worked with thousands of teenagers. And in the community theater productions. And what I discovered, sadly, among so many of them, is that many of them were really talented, but their parents wouldn't hear of them having a life in the theater or in show business. And I realized that if the spirit doesn't get to expand itself and realize itself, then it turns in on its owner. And that owner becomes crippled in some way emotionally. I saw it time after time. These were the first kids that turned to drugs in the 60s. It was a heartbreak for me. And they taught me so much about what I would want to be when I was a parent. So if I've been a good parent at all, I put it at the feet of those teenagers that I work with. They were my teachers, and their parents were my teachers, because I swore I would never be that kind of parent. And so I didn't know what this child was going to bring to his life, but I was watching for it, and it snuck up on me. Because when he was in the fourth grade, I think, David, you can answer me better than that. When were you Peter Pan?
Oh.
Yesterday?
Yeah. No, it was a little later. It was like sixth or seventh grade, I think.
No. It was before that. Because
maybe it was fourth grade.
Because for some strange reason, I did not know you had a singing voice. Oh. Now, that's crazy. That's crazy to me.
Now, didn't I at some point come in and say, I'm going to be Barbara Streisand? Didn't I do that? I know. No, I opened up the door one day and started to sing, I'm the greatest star for your company.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You did that.
Okay. That I did.
That was a little later.
But so I was Peter Pan. So I was Peter Pan in the fourth grade.
And it was.
And you didn't know I could sing, and that was it.
Well, it was at the community center because I had the ability. I was in programming at the center.
Well, so background, my mother was the director of the theater department when I was a kid, and then later became the executive director of the Jewish Community Center of Cincinnati.
No, I didn't. No, David, I did not.
But you became a bigwig. You were the head of marketing. I don't know. Well, you were some bigwig at the Jewish
community. Well, that's what your child will say to you.
I just remember Jews. No. There was a swimming pool.
What you remembered most, because I learned that children are affected by this. If their parents have a lot of keys to a building, that suddenly makes them the executive or the head of that building. And I used to have a bundle of keys, and I'd get in the building when it was locked, and you were with me sometimes.
You definitely ran that place. You ran that place with an iron fist.
No. Well, anyhow, so you were, I started a little theater department for children because there wasn't any. Which is what I started to say is that whatever my kids needed, I was in the position of creating a program because I figured that they weren't the only kid that needed that. And so when you started showing interest, I created a children's theater program. There was no theater department, David. I created, as you grew up, I kept adding on another okay. segment of, until we got up to senior citizens, which you left town before that. Anyhow.
Listen, I can always go back. Paige Crafters is still there. I can go back. This has got something to look forward to.
Oh God!
And then our dear friend Dale Bush kind of took over for you and then expanded it and made it.
Was later on. Yeah,
love Dale and Ted. Ted Bush, shout out. So to get back to Terrence's question, so the answer is when you heard me sing as Peter Pan and Peter Pan at the Jewish Community Center. Yes. That's when you knew there was a thing.
It blew me away.
Oh, that's totally so nice.
Wow.
Thank you.
Totally. And then after that, then I knew something was going on. And then I started a junior high musical theater program. And you blew the community away when your first solo was Johnny One Note.
Yeah, I sang Johnny One Note. An old Judy Garland chestnut.
You want to give us a little bit of it now?
Oh, dude, can you hold that note today?
Oh, sure. Are you kidding?
Don't ask him that. Please don't ask him.
Poor Johnny, one note. Yeah, okay, that's it. That's all you got.
No,
no, no, no, no.
Hang out with gusto and just over the lord of the place. Sing Johnny one note. Okay, that's really, that's it. That's like, Brianna's Instagramming me. Thank you, Grammy. That was great. Thank you, Terrence, for that question. That's my turn?
Yes.
So this one comes from...
Well, wait a minute. I would like to add to that story,
No. No adding. No adding. Okay. I don't care about... I honestly don't care about me. Rapid fire. This comes from TK in Singapore.
Ooh.
Now, we got a lot of questions that were sort of historical questions, but this was kind of like it wrapped everything up. Dear Grammy, I would like to get some hope from you. I know you lived through many landmark moments in American history, from the Great Depression to World War II to the McCarthy hearings to the Kennedy assassination to the 60s riots to Watergate and beyond. Have you ever seen a political climate like this? Can you give us hope that we will overcome as we have in the past? Big question, TK.
Yeah, TK, that's the big question that Americans are facing today. No, I'm not the first one to say that we've never had an experience like we're having now. In my lifetime, and I'm happy to say, by the way, I just missed the Depression. I wasn't quite born. It was near the very, very end, but nevertheless. There has always been a floor that an American, I believe, can count on. And the floor, even though I don't think we realized it, we took it all for granted among the thousands of privileges that we have as Americans, especially those of us that are white. Our eyes are only being ripped open now. But there was a floor that we all shared that we took for granted until 4 years ago. And that floor was that we had a value system that was fair, that meant to be fair. It wasn't always fair, to say the least. It was not perfect. But there was a striving for that floor, a value system that said all men are created equal. Not every country had that floor. We didn't even live up to it. But we had it, even if it was aspirational. So there was a fairness about the law most of the time. There was a fairness about life. Now, I know it's important that I say that I'm speaking from a white perspective. There's no question. As I say these words now, I realize that, Brianna, you may be speaking from a totally different perspective. I would be interested sometime to know what you had, what security you felt. But we're talking about a basic floor of security, of a value system. The value system was represented in a parchment paper called the Constitution. And somehow or other, I don't think I was the only one to live their life thinking that that Constitution somehow was made out of iron. It's not. It's made out of common paper. And what it demands from us is that everyone buys into the value system. Well, that's a very fragile thing. People don't always buy into things. And that's what happened these last 4 years, in my opinion. The fragility of that document, the fragility of our base, was rattled and threatened and broken, deliberately broken, that has left us wide open to a totalitarian form of government that, if you don't know history, if a person doesn't know history of what happens in totalitarian countries, then I have a great deal of sympathy for you. I was fortunate never to have lived in one, but 6 million of my people did. That's close enough for me. I know that I've lost family that I never even knew I had. That's reality. So to not take that fragile piece of paper and the commitment, the human behavioral commitment that it takes to maintain that value system is what is so scary. And that's what happened. Somehow or other, millions of people decided somehow or other to take for granted what we have here. Millions of people, tens of millions of people decided, not bad people. I'm sure there are people that are my friends that I, but this struck our heart. And I pray, and I think it will happen, because for now, the value system, I think, still can spring back. If it kept up being battered, no, it probably wouldn't. It probably would fade away. And we would just be like some other country. I don't know whether that's a satisfactory answer.
Well, I think you're giving TK a glimmer of hope that you think that we can still turn this around.
I do. Well, I don't mean to speak Democratic or Republican, but I do think that Joe Biden is the man of the hour because of his value system. And if you notice, he speaks about a value system. You've never heard people speak of values like they are now. Listen for those words. Listen for the words of values and standards and respect. Watch for those, listen for those, because that's what we've lost over the last 4 years.
Well, you've always heard, you know, the Republicans refer to themselves as the party of family values. But when Joe Biden's talking about values, because he's talking about it in a time when they really are being on every level, all norms being shattered, all values being threatened. When he talks about it, he's first of all talking about it from his heart, but also he's talking about it in a time when it actually has resonance. And that's actually the thing that we need to shore up. Graham, I got one last question for you. I think this one comes from Stephanie in Connecticut.
Okay.
Hi, Steph.
She wants to know, dear Grammy, what was your initial thought upon meeting Brianna? What changed over time and why?
Well, I have to tell the story of how I first saw Brianna, because I didn't know who she was and I didn't know David had her in his life. Because one day on Facebook, up pops a video that David mounted on there, and he comes on, obviously with his iPhone, and there appears this stunning woman next to him. I don't know who she is. He doesn't bother to introduce her. He just says, okay, are you ready? 1, 2, 3, and they start to sing. And that was my introduction to Brianna. Well, David knows I love to hear him sing, but at that moment, it didn't matter because I was mesmerized with this lovely woman that was singing. She wasn't just singing. There was something that was coming from her soul. And the sound that was coming from her vocal cords was like I hadn't heard quite that before. And I started to weep. And when they finished, I replayed it a second time and I wept. And I replayed it a third time and I wept. And then I said to myself out loud, and I do want you to know, I don't speak to myself out loud very often. I said to myself out loud, he is going to fall in love with her.
Well, I'd already fallen in love with her by that time, but
not only didn't I know the lady's name, I didn't know you had already fallen in love with her. So thanks for telling your mother.
No, it was, we were singing from Porgy and Bess because we were a couple of nerds and we were singing the Crown
we
Bess
duet. We were a
duet.
Couple nerds.
Yeah.
No, you weren't. It was beautiful.
Thanks.
No, Grammy. It was. He made me do that. I did not want to do that.
But you were really game, babe. You
I just, was, because I kind of wanted to sing it.
You know, it was super fun. We loved it. We're going to post really that again fun. Whenever that but comes
it's
back.
It's so funny because all your family is always like, yeah, the first time I ever knew Brianna was through Facebook.
Because, that's true.
Because we were very just in our own world.
And I remember I had that video and I would show it to my friends and I would say, she likes me, right? She really likes me. I'm like, look at her. Look at the way she's singing with me.
Who did you show that to?
I mean, like, I showed it to Reese. I showed it to...
Oh, my
God. Yeah, Michael. I showed it to everybody. I was like, because I was trying to... Like, I'm not crazy, right? But she really likes me, right?
Oh, what did Michael say?
Everybody kind of thought maybe I wasn't crazy and you did like me. Yeah.
Well, I can tell you how I knew she liked you. Because you were in your apartment.
Oh, that's a really good point,
it
Mom.
It is true. I did show up at his apartment many.
Yes, you did.
It's like, for my lunch break.
She was doing the Bull Durham.
I was doing a lab.
The Bull Durham lab.
And every lunch break, I would be at his apartment.
And at one point, I just said, I just want to kind of observe that you're spending all of your spare time with me and none of it with your castmates. I just so we're clear. That's actually what's happening.
I was clear.
Grammy, it's been great having you on the show today, everybody. We're going to get it together. One day you're going to have askgrammy.com. You'll be able to send it. In the meantime, if you have further questions, we're going to have Grammy back in season 2 of The Swear with Bri and Dave. And we'll have more questions for Grammy. So that's just a little taste of some of the wit and wisdom.
Taste of the swirl, baby.
Of my mother, Marcia Dorothy Fisher Goldsmith. The
LLC.
LLC. It's not the third. Grammy, thank you. We love you.
I love you too. From here to beyond.
Happy Hanukkah.
So
happy New Year. We'll
happy
talk soon.
Happy Hanukkah. Happy New Year. Merry Christmas.
Love you, Mom. Three.
Love you too. Bye-bye.
Bye. So, babe. So, does that mean it's time for our weekly segment of joy and chicanery?
Which one is that? Because we have 2 weekly segments.
Well, you know, we let go of the other segment, but we're bringing it back this week with a roar.
Oh,
because something actually came out in the New York Times that it was a gag, but it's not my gaggery.
Oh, okay.
We'll do gaggery first.
I think it's time for
this week in gaggery. Go, babe.
Oh.
Do you have one?
Oh, my God. I don't have one.
But, you know, it's interesting because you started this segment as if you had something queued up that you were ready to launch in with.
Did I?
It just, the energy was giving me.
Oh, no. I'm just trying to give you what you're giving me.
So let's do this. Let's just have an experiment this week. We're going to close our eyes. Mm. We're going to take a deep breath in. Everybody join me. And then. Deep, just let it go, let it go. And one more in, just really, really deep. Take all of that oxygen in and breathe out all that bad air. Breathe it all out, all right. Now I want you to think back along the week that you've just had and let one moment rise to your consciousness. Just one moment that you might describe in politics, social justice, pop culture, music as something that made you gag. When I count down from 5, you'll open your eyes and the gaggery will emit forth. 5, 4, 3. You're feeling the gaggery, you know it's there. 2, 1. And what do you got, babe?
I will say your
babe, you did not meditate properly.
I did.
I gave you all the tools.
I was gonna say your Grand Hotel album.
It was the Grand Tour.
The Grand Tour album.
Tell me about why that's a gaggery.
I had never heard it before. You've actually played 2 different vinyls this week. You got obsessed with the Grand Tour, and then you also played Fiorello.
Yeah.
And I had not listened to either of those, and I found them to be like delightful.
Yeah.
So I was kind of gagged that, well, it's not really a gag because I kind of fell into musical theater. I mean, I love what I do, but it's not something I'm not like you where I grew up listening to show tunes. I mean, I did, but they're very different than what you listen to. And I also never listened to things that I'd never thought I could do.
Or be in. And all of that's changed, of course, because now there's absolutely nothing you couldn't be in or do.
Well, sure. I mean,
it's true.
I mean, yes, I feel like I can do anything.
There's absolutely no reason why, if there was a revival of Fiorello, that you could not play one of those.
Yes. It's much more of a thing now. So, yeah, I found them to be really beautiful. I know you were obsessed with the song Marianne, and I only knew it because we had done a Jerry Herman concert, and my friend Ryan had sang it, an acoustic, like, dialed down version of it, and I knew nothing to compare it to. And then I listened to, who's the guy who sung it?
Ron Holgate
do this fully opera version, and yeah. I was like, oh my god, I love that too. It's so different, and I love them both for different reasons. It was just really cool to hear the source material. And then what was the song that was playing today?
There were two. When Will I Fall in Love?
When Will I Fall in Love?
And which is the precursor to your song from Prince of Broadway,
Will He Like Me? So that was kind of cool to hear that. It's just always cool to listen to legit musical theater, mixy, whatever stuff. Because I think I really shine when I sing that material. It's what sets me apart from most people, most other, like, black girls on Broadway. And so it's always cool to discover new material. So that was kind of a gag for me this week.
That's a very sweet gag, babe.
Well, is it not good enough?
No, I love it.
To be honest, I couldn't think of any political ones because we don't watch that much TV, everyone. We switch to Sling. We cut cable. And so we have channels. And of course, we have MSNBC because, hello. But
we get that on Sling.
Yeah, but David has his TV in his office now, and he's got a Fire Stick. So now he really just watches it in his office. So I don't have to watch it anymore, which I always complained about. But now I'm like, oh, well, now I don't know what the hell is happening.
You don't want to know.
I don't want to know. I have no idea politically, other than that the president's crazy.
He is out of his freaking head, and you don't even need to worry about it, because on January 20th, it's all going to go away.
Yes, amen.
So mine is, I thought I had mentioned this on a previous pod, but you told me that I hadn't. And so let's just do it now. And if we find out that, oh no, you did tell me this, then I'll just edit this out. And that was your gallery. Do you know who in honor of, you know, the inauguration coming up just a few short weeks away, who is the first black indigenous person of color to be VP, babe? It's a trick question.
Kamala.
No. It is actually not.
Who is it?
The first BIPOC, if I may, VP, was a man named Charles Curtis.
Oh.
He served as VP from 1929 to 1932 under Herbert Hoover. And he is Native American.
Wow.
He had a Native American mother and a white father. He was from the Kaw, K-A-W Nation.
Okay, that's a gag.
His language was Kanza, which later became
Kwanzaa,
Kansas, but okay. You're close. And the man lived in a teepee.
Oh, we love a teepee. You know who's got that adorable teepee is Kyle. She's got that adorable teepee in her son's room. And it's like he goes in there to read, and if he wants to have a fort moment.
Well, it's possible he is a distant relative of Charles Curtis. I don't really know what number VP he was, but he was VP, out and proud, Native American.
That's amazing.
Is that amazing? So actually, Kamala is the second person of color to be VP.
Incredible.
It's not enough.
No. But it's
something.
But, you know, we've been talking about, the history is made. Well, of course, she's the first woman.
Yep.
But wow, I just thought no one had ever gone before her. But, you know, men, it's different.
It's
different.
Terrible.
It's just, you men guys just, have really ruled it's, the
and we need to just sit the
back
fuck down.
Off. You we need to back
sit down.
Off.
We just sit down. We need
you
to
know,
back off and
one
sit
One thing
down.
This week, David and I, we had a lot of, not arguments, but maybe heated discussions about I was feeling like I wasn't being appreciated because, you know, we've moved into our home. We've now been here a month and 2 days. And you would not know that we just moved into our home because our home was unpacked and like hella cute in within 4 days.
Yeah.
And so it's only gotten cuter because as furniture has shipped and lamps have come and blah, blah, blah. And so I was feeling underappreciated and I told David, I was like, you never tell me, all you do is complain that you're hungry, but you don't realize I'm making dinner and I'm also making dinner for tomorrow. And I'm also ordering all these things for our house. And I'm also doing laundry and I'm making our beds and I'm, you know how I get.
It was an amazing speech.
And
I wanted to get
but then
to
I had,
my computer and start writing it down.
And then I had this discussion with my Marco Polo girls because they were experiencing the same things with their significant others, which was that they just were feeling like we run women. We have to run the house.
Who rule the world, babe?
Girls.
Okay.
And, you know, we don't even have kids right now. If we had kids, we would even be better at this, right? But, like, I just feel like women are such incredible managers. And we really know how to run a household. So when I think of the household of the United States, I want a woman running it because we know how to multitask so much better, babe. And I'm not coming for you, but
your multitasking is awful.
Like, he can only do one thing at a time, and it's totally fine because it's adorable. But, like, I was like, go in your office and finish your deadline. Don't say anything to me because I was just like, you're asking me other questions about, like, what's in this Tupperware. And it doesn't even matter. And you're annoying me because now I have to answer your question and cook dinner. And I don't even want to cook dinner. I'm trying to find joy in this. And I can't even have joy because I'm sitting over here trying to remember what you just asked me and where do I think you should hang up a picture. And I'm like, I don't freaking care, David.
It was the shelves, to be fair. I was hanging up shelves. In the living room.
And I really appreciated that because I leave all the hanging of things to him. And I was trying to be better this week. So, like, we had a TV stand thing that came and I put that together. I put together a lamp because I just wanted him to just be able to go in his room and work. If you need to make the money, go in that room and make the money. But then let me run everything else and don't say anything about it.
I'm good with that arrangement. That's fine. Wow. I just needed to know where you wanted me to hang the shelves because if I got it wrong, you wouldn't hear the end of it.
Exactly.
That's all that was.
Well, all that to say, women should be in power the whole time.
I co-sign that completely.
We are incredible. We are incredible.
You are. And that was This Week in Gaggery. We'll be right back. And we're back.
Oh, Jesus. No, now are we back to taking fake breaks?
No, we're not because we have segments.
Oh, that's right.
We have segments. And
maybe we should make a song for Ask Grammy.
Oh, that's a good idea. Ask Grammy. Ask her now. Ask her whatever you want and how. Ask Grammy. Ask her now. Ask her whatever you want. I love it.
What about this?
Go.
Ask. No, I'm going to do the same thing. You're just going to edit this.
Ask Grammy. Ask her now. Ask her whatever you want.
Ask. No, this is a different song. Yeah. This is a different song.
Ask Grammy. Now you have to be really careful. It doesn't become Ask Grammy. You have to put that K
in there.
I'm
going to let you do the first one alone.
Ask Grammy. Ask her now. Ask her whatever you want and how. Ask Grammy. Ask her now.
Ask her whatever you want and how.
Cha-cha-cha. That wasn't bad.
I didn't know why you pointed at me. We were supposed to finish together.
Oh, I thought you had a new ending you wanted to try out on
Baby,
me.
You know I'm not very creative.
I don't know that. All right. So speaking of
Grammy?
No, songs.
Okay.
What's the word I'm looking for? Jingles.
Jingles.
It's time to bring back that perennial favorite. Call.
Yep.
It's time to bring back that perennial favorite.
Call out.
Hey.
Call in. Call out.
Give it back.
Call in. Call out.
Oh, yeah.
Call in.
That's what I like.
Call out.
And what?
And
so it's call out, call in. I know y'all have missed it. We haven't really done it. But I was going through the New York Times, as I do.
Very smart.
And I came across a headline. And you will not believe, babe, what the headline was.
I think I know. Go ahead.
The headline was, what if instead of calling people out, we called them in?
No.
I'm going to show it to you right now, babe.
Look. These people are listening. Oh, my God.
Professor Loretta J. Ross is combating cancel culture with a popular class at Smith College. And we have this picture of this beautiful, elder African-American woman. I mean, I believe she's African-American. She's in yes. sort of African-ish garb in this photo. And then later I saw her on The Morning Joe. She came on.
Fabulous. What'd she say?
So, she's teaching this class at Smith College. So I'm just going to read a little like quote from her from, yeah. From the article. I am challenging the call-out culture, Professor Ross said from her home in Atlanta, where she was lecturing on Zoom to students on a recent evening in a blue muumuu from Ghana.
Ah!
I think you can understand how calling out is toxic. It really does alienate people and makes them fearful of speaking up. That perspective has made Professor Ross, 67, an unlikely figure in the culture wars. A radical black feminist who has been doing human rights work for 4 decades, she was one of the signatories of a widely denounced letter in Harper's Magazine for which she was herself called out. There's such an irony for being called out for calling out the calling out culture, she said. It really was amusing. At Smith College, Professor Ross teaches courses called White Supremacy in the Age of Trump, of which the calling in module is part, and Reproductive Justice. Yet she tells students when they enroll, if you need a trigger warning or a safe space, I urge you to drop this class. I think we overuse the word trigger when we really mean discomfort.
Exactly.
She said.
Amen.
And we should be able to have uncomfortable conversations. Mm-hmm. She doesn't believe people should be publicly shamed for accidentally misgendering a classmate, which she once did, leading to a Title IX complaint that was later dismissed, for sending a stupid tweet they now regret, or for, say, admitting they once liked a piece of pop culture now viewed in a different light, such as The Cosby Show. If it were on TV right now, I'd watch the rerun, she said. What I'm really impatient with is calling people out for something they said when they were a teenager, when they're now 55. I mean, we all at some point did some unbelievably stupid stuff as teenagers, right? Professor Ross thinks call-out culture has taken conversations that could have once been learning opportunities and turned them into mud wrestling on message boards, YouTube comments, Twitter, and at colleges like Smith, where proving one's commitment to social justice has become something of a varsity sport. Mm. I think this is also related to something I just discovered called doom scrolling, Professor Ross told the students. I think we actually sabotage our own happiness with this unrestrained anger. And I honestly have to ask, why are you making choices to make the world crueler than it needs to be and calling that being woke?
Hmm. Tell these people.
The antidote to that outrage cycle, Professor Ross believes, is calling in. Calling in is like calling out, but done privately and with respect. It's a call out done with love, she said. That may mean simply sending someone a private message or even ringing them on the telephone, !, to discuss the matter, or simply taking a breath before commenting, screenshotting, or demanding one do better without explaining how. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Calling out assumes the worst. Calling in involves conversation, compassion, and
Amen.
Context.
Compassion, come on now.
It doesn't mean a person should ignore harm, slight, or damage, mm-hmm. but nor should she, he, or they exaggerate it. Every time somebody disagrees with me, it's not verbal violence, Professor Ross said. I'm not getting re-raped. Overstatement of harm is not helpful when you're trying to create a culture of compassion. And then she goes on talking about what it was like when she was young and historically. It's a great
wow.
It's a great article. She was the executive director of the D.C. Rape Crisis Center from 1979 to 1982.
Wow.
And she has her own sexual assault stories. So she's, you know, she's come through a lot to get to this, you know, this point. The idea of calling in occurred to Professor Ross at a speech she was organizing at Smith in 2015 to honor Gloria Steinem. What was up with all the nastiness she saw on Twitter, she asked a young woman. Oh, you mean calling out, the woman said. Y'all named it, Professor Ross said in surprise. She soon assembled a group of students to practice the techniques of calling in and took the message on the road. During quarantine this summer, she began offering an online course called Calling in the Calling Out Culture and is working on a book of the same name. So anyway, it goes on a little bit more. There's a little bit more. So really, she talks about Colin Kaepernick and George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and dragging and moral outrage online. And it's...
That's really cool.
Yeah. What do you think, babe? How do you feel about that?
I love her. I so agree with her. And I think it's been really tricky in this, the pandemic and everything with George Floyd and everything, like even in our business.
Yeah.
Because everyone wants to burn everything down. And it's not really necessary if you can call in people and have those uncomfortable conversations she's talking about. I really love the part about every time someone says something you disagree with, is you're not being re-raped. It's not a trigger. It is just an uncomfortable thing. Like, buck up. And I feel like the last 15, 20, 30, probably more years, we've been gearing up to this cancel culture that we're at now. Mm. And so because of that, people have the thinnest skin in the world. And because we have technology now, people can just stay behind their computers and never have to be accountable for what they say. And so the combination of those two is lethal. And it's where we are now, which is people are only calling out and they don't want to have any conversations with people who disagree with them. And it's like, no, the only light is going to be in the in-between, unfortunately.
She calls it, what you were saying about every time somebody disagrees with me, it's not verbal violence. She calls that overstatement of harm. She uses that phrase a lot, like on Morning Joe.
This conversation with Maddie, too, because, you know, Maddie is really a person who believes in putting trigger warnings up before shows and blah, blah, blah. And I think there are times when that's necessary. Like if it's damaging to your health and there are strobe lights and you have,
right,
you know, epilepsy, then yes, we should put that up. But if there is a simulated rape scene, like maybe you should just fucking research the piece before you go see it and decide if you want to sit through it. I'm sorry. I'm just like that. I also think that sometimes when you're uncomfortable, it's a good thing. It's a good thing to work through that. That's the only way you get to the other side. And I realize you have to do it in your own time. You have to be ready for it. And you don't want to be, you know, forced to do it quickly. But
the fact that whatever you're confronted with is an opportunity for you to work through that thing.
It is. But I realize that that is a very, like, heady type of thing that a lot of people don't understand.
Like, yeah, nobody wants to be uncomfortable. But
no, and a lot of people are dictated by fear. Their lives are dictated by fear. Every decision they make is dictated by fear of having to relive that trauma or whatever. And that's okay because that's the place they're in and they're on their journey. So who am I to dictate, oh, you should do this because I'm this part in my journey, so you need to be. But I think ultimately it's funny to me when people say, oh, we should really, you know, try to lean into those uncomfortable times, and then they don't. And I'm like, okay, but that's what you said we should do. That, like, that's your whole thing is like, oh, this is going to grow us as people and it's going to make us more compassionate and empathetic to people, you know, and that's what we need right now in this world.
So if there's more that...
I probably have an opinion a lot of people are going to disagree with, and it doesn't really matter.
And babe, do you have a call-out call-in for today or no? Shall we do another meditation?
Please, God, no. I guess I don't.
You know what?
No, I'm really, that's probably my call out, is people who say that they want to be uncomfortable and then they don't.
And then they don't. And then when the rubber meets the road.
I mean, that's the work. That's the work we're supposed to be doing. Everybody talking about, ooh, they doing so much work in the pandemic. Yeah. I'm working on me. Well, if you're really working on you, get to therapy and get to working.
There you go. And sorry. That was
Call. Call. Ooh. No.
Nope.
Call
yeah.
out.
Yeah.
Call
it. Okay.
Call out.
Give it
me. Call
Let's
in.
Have it.
Call out. Uh-huh. Call in.
Bring it back.
Call out.
And what?
And in.
So, babe, that was a great episode.
Oh, yay!
Yay, we did it.
We did it.
High five.
This is a 10, though.
That was a high 10.
Yep.
Okay, one last bit of biz, which is, you know, there is a big election coming up. So if you have any friends, family, people, acquaintances, people on Facebook who are voting in the state of Georgia... we need to bring in these two Senate seats so that we can get some shit done in the next 4 years and rescue democracy from the fires. So I have two places to go. Peachvote.com. Mm. A lot of resources there. You can you not just give money, but also help with kind of facilitating resources there. Peachvote.com is a good one. Fairfightaction.com, of course, is Stacey Abrams. Website, y'all know who she is. Give to one of those organizations, and also Vote Save America. You can adopt the state of Georgia, and if you're there or if you know someone who's there, they can actually go and knock on doors, and that can all get facilitated through Vote Save America.
Amen.
So that's all I got. I don't have a reading this week, babe.
That's okay.
Okay. I will end the episode with the beautiful aforementioned song from the Grand Tour by the great Jerry Herman. Sung by Ron Holgate.
I love that.
This is Mary Ann.
Don't ever tell me that you heard the cello, for you never met Mary Ann. Don't talk of or violet, or yellow, for you never met Mary Ann. Don't mention garnets or pearls from Manila. Forget them as fast as you can. Thank you.
boom, 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 boom. It's good, so good. Oh, since we're together, it's good.
The Swirl with Bri and Dave was created using Anchor, and you can find us on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you get your favorite podcast.
We hope you'll subscribe, and if you want to tell us how we're doing, please leave us a rating or a review.
If you'd like to follow us on social media, I'm Brianna Marie, and he's Dave Lyrics.
Music for this podcast is by Bo Black.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Look forward to having you back for the next episode.
Taste the swirl, everyone!
Bye.